Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I'm Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening. David.
Yes.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you as well.
Thank you.
Real quick, I know the listeners listened to last week's episode with Scott, but there is a new GoFundMe for you and your situation pinned to the top of the homepage at BattleshipPretension.com.
Yes.
Also, I believe my pinned tweet at Twitter.com/DavyPretension.
Yeah. There's a video that you can watch that was shot and edited by our friend Jason Eakin, and I think he did a great job with it.
He sure did, yeah.
And yeah, so if you want to sort of get a sense of what things are looking like for me these days, you can check that out. And as always, I apologize for my voice. It is particularly weak these days, but for good reasons, which is that we've been changing the settings on my vent, which means I'm, by which I mean, like, we're lowering my dependence on the vent. So that means, like, I'm getting less airflow from the vent, which means I'm doing more breathing on my own. But that does mean that my voice is a little weaker, and I can't, you know, I have to take more breaths as I talk. So sorry about that, but it's for good reason. So if it bothers you, go fuck yourself. Merry Christmas.
All right. Well, you asked how I'm doing. We're all very sad, those of us who like good acting, and I guess especially those of us who are steeped in the or have been steeped in the world of television.
This is
the second time in recent months that we've opened a show with a kind of obituary for a television great. Scott and I talked about Norman Lear a few weeks ago, and here we are talking about the very unexpected and sudden, sudden for us.
He was pretty young. He was, what, 61?
Yeah. And he'd only been diagnosed with lung cancer. We found out post-mortem within the last, like, year or so.
Happened
very quickly, I think. Andre Brouwer passed away, who, of course, is also a film actor. He's been in
lots of movies. Yeah, he was in Glory. He was in... I remember he played a very important role in The Mist, and that role is the skeptic be wrong.
I didn't see that. I did see somewhat recently last year, She Said. He was in She Said, but we mostly know him from television, from Homicide, and then from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but also in between that, from the short-lived but much-loved Men of a Certain Age.
That's right, which I never saw, but I think I would like it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He was such a great presence and an actor who clearly understood what his tools were and how to use them.
Yes, 100%. Like, this is a guy who... just like, even when he's playing, you know, even when he's acting in Glory, where, you know, a lot of those characters, like, they don't have any kind of, like, real education or anything, but he still is, like, the intellectual one. Like, he was an actor that just exuded intelligence. You know, you look at Homicide, and he's, like, kind of the wunderkind detective, and then, you know, even when it's used to a humorous effect in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's just one of those things, like, I've never seen him play dumb. Maybe he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. But that's the thing, is like, when I think of actors that just, you just see them on the screen, they don't even need to say anything, and you're just like, that guy's smarter than me. And he was definitely one of them. Like, there is a reason that he was cast as, you know, the skeptic in The Mist, and it's because, and that's the other thing, is going into this movie, you know that he's wrong, but they give him a good enough argument, and he sells it enough that part of you is like, well, maybe he's got a point.
Yeah.
Even though you know that that's not what the movie is. And Yeah, it was always a pleasure seeing him on screen. I mean, I haven't watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine in a while, but I watched the first few seasons, and he was always, I mean, always a highlight, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, that's Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I know it ended a few years ago, but I only watched it for the first time in the past year, so it's very fresh in my mind, and yeah, he could be the butt of the joke often because he was the smart guy surrounded by a bunch of nut bars. But as the show went on, he became sillier.
Yes, he did.
There's an episode. There's often the cold opens on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which would have nothing to do with the rest of the show, or like the funniest part. And there was one where there's a bag of marshmallows, and they're all like, they like somehow they know that Captain Holt has never had a marshmallow, and so they all like bet, like, or they try to do their impression of like what would Captain Holt eating a marshmallow be like, and everyone like has their very serious like but then Joe Latrulio just does this like silly high pitched laugh, and then Captain Holt comes in and tries a marshmallow and then does the silly high pitched laugh. Great. It's so funny.
That's hilarious.
But then also like his authority as an actor and his intelligence and heart, like there's the last two seasons of the show, there's an ongoing storyline that he's having marital difficulties and with Mark Evan Jackson.
That's right.
And the amount of pathos that he gets, even after like at that point, 6 years of being silly, like still being able to get across the heart of Captain Holt and of his love for his husband. Great performance. And Men of a Certain Age, I haven't looked to see if it's, hopefully that's streaming somewhere, because that was a great show for the two seasons or whatever that it was on.
And you'll need to refresh my memory a little bit. So, you know, I think a lot about like, what are my comedy buttons? Like, what's something that's like, anytime it's on screen, I'm going to laugh. And somebody having like either an otherwise reasonable person or a really positive person having tremendous hate for someone, whether it be like Michael Scott hating Toby in The Office or whatever. And I don't remember who it is.
Kira Sedgwick.
I knew that.
Yeah.
But I don't remember, like, is she another captain?
Yeah. And then she becomes the commissioner.
Right.
And tortures him. And, it's...
And just the hilarious way that, like, of course, the deadpan way that he speaks, like, in such hyperbole about how terrible she is. It's just hilarious.
And also the fact that character dies and he doesn't stop hating her or talking terribly about her. Men of a Certain Age, both seasons are available to stream on Max.
All right.
So,
maybe I'll do that once I'm done watching all of Monk.
Okay.
I gotta watch something else.
Yeah. Anyway, so RIP Andre Brouwer.
Absolutely.
I would also like to tell you about tweakedaudio.com. Tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. I use them each and every day of my life. I've been catching up on, or what I've been doing, as I often do in December, is listening or re-listening to some of the best reviewed metal albums of the year. So sometimes it's revisiting favorites, or sometimes it's discovering new favorites. And so I discovered a band from Spain called Todo Mal, all bad, I guess.
Yeah.
And their album is called The Greater Good. And it's, I guess it would fall under the spectrum of sort of like art metal, art like post-doom metal.
Okay.
It's very good. And it sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. Also, the cover art has rabbits fighting. Like drawing of rabbits fighting.
It sure does.
Yeah.
So, David, like, let me ask you this.
What?
About how far are you from just starting a metal podcast?
No, very far.
I feel like you could absolutely do it.
I think I've said this before. To a non-metal person, it seems like I listen to a lot of metal.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's like the nerdiness of metal and the devotion of some of these people is like, I'm nowhere near. I'm a neophyte.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, sound good to my tweakedaudio.com earbuds that are available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler, we're back.
Yes.
Merry Christmas, as you said.
Yes, indeed.
Let's get into it, shall we? It's the holiday season.
Yeah.
The holiday season. What's that?
I'm sorry. Go on. I know you're at it somewhere. I'm sorry I interrupted. What are you
What were you going to say?
No, I was going to get into it. So you go ahead.
Okay. No, I just said the holiday season is upon us, which is... For people who listen to my other podcast, the one where I met your mother, is a very awkward thing that Ross says while trying to hit on a woman in a recent episode.
Trying to hit on women?
Yeah. Oh, the holiday season is upon us. anyway.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, let's get into it, shall we? What are we talking about?
Well, I'll say this. You know, at this point... We even did this before we started recording today. Like, any time we have a topic that seems not quite so niche, we're always like, we have to have done this before, right?
Yeah.
And we've been going for 16 years, you know, 16 and a half easily.
Yeah.
I'm shocked we have not done this before. In fact, even as I say it, part of me is like, surely we have to have done this before.
There's but I don't remember talking about any of this.
I don't either.
Yeah.
And so, I was thinking, let's talk about all the different depictions of Santa Claus in movies.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay.
My list is composed only of movies in which it's actually Santa Claus.
Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
No, not Bad Santa.
Not Bad Santa, yeah.
Not A Christmas Story, which has memorable Santa.
Yeah, or Home Alone. Yeah. Like, there are really memorable, like, you know, Santa impersonators. That's not right. Elf has a great one, played by Artie Lang, I believe.
Played by who?
Artie Lang.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. It's been so long. Of course, in Trading Places, Dan Aykroyd dresses up as Santa.
Yeah, that's right. I guess... for a short scene, I believe Popeye Doyle in The French Connection is dressed as Santa.
Okay, it's been a while, yeah.
But yeah, and so like that could be sort of its own episode, and obviously, you know, there are plenty of movies where a killer is dressed like Santa. But yeah, so here I wanted to stick to like depictions of the actual Santa Claus that we all know and love.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of movies. I didn't even think about that. We could do a whole podcast on killer Santas.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you seen Dial Code Santa, the French...
No, I haven't.
...movie that is, like, the bridge between Die Hard and Home Alone?
Oh,
like,
okay.
It came out after Die Hard and before Home Alone in France, and it's basically about a, like, weird rich kid who, like, gets left alone at Christmas, and he and his butler... are being attacked by a crazed man dressed as Santa, and then he, like, Home Alone style, like, builds a bunch of traps and stuff.
Oh, wow.
But it's way more violent than Home Alone, because it's, like, it's not a kid's movie, it's just about a kid. It's not really a very good movie, but,
Well, obviously, I still have to watch it.
Yeah. It has multiple titles, so it might be, I think it's on Shudder, but it's on... So it might not be under Dial Code Santa. It's been released a lot of times. Anyway,
so
go ahead. What I realize, I'm putting my list together.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this, I think this speaks more to me and my viewing habits over the course of my life.
Sure.
almost everything that I have on here is like some sort of like twist on Santa. I have I only have a few that are like heartwarming, like Santa movies, because I don't think I watch a lot of those. I'll start with probably my first introduction to Santa as a character in a movie.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a Miracle on 34th Street household.
Sure.
That was a Christmas classic for us. And so I'm already forgetting his name, Edmund something. It's not Ed Gwynn, because that's
Edmund O'Brien?
Is it Edwin?
No, I think it is Edmund. I think you're right.
Okay. I keep wanting to say Ed Gwynn, but of course that's Herman Munster.
Right. And then Edwin is the Mad Hatter.
Oh. Is what?
Edwin is the Mad Hatter.
It is Edmund Gwen.
Edmund Gwen.
Ed Gwynn, but Edmund Gwen.
Okay.
And then, of course, Richard Attenborough played the role in the 90s remake. Looking up Miracle on 34th Street, I only thought there were those two, but there are multiple TV versions
that
I have not seen. I've only seen the two like big theatrical versions, 47 and 94, but there's a 73 movie and a 1959 movie.
Yeah.
And then, that seems to be the main two, but weirdly, oh my God, what a coincidence. 1959 movie, made for TV movie. Guess who plays Kris Kringle in that?
It's Edmund O'Brien, right?
No, it's Edwin.
What?
Yeah. Edwin plays Kris Kringle in the 1959 movie. Orson Bean is in it.
Well, that's a creepy Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Edwin is
Oregon, who, I don't know what else he did. Looks like just TV. He just happens to have a name similar to Billy Corgan. Miracle on 34th Street. And that is like, that is probably still my like sort of platonic ideal of Santa Claus, in that he's like, he's so sweet and he, I can't remember what. In the 90s one, it's sign language, or is it sign language in the original as well?
Sign language in the 90s one.
What is it?
It's Swahili?
Swahili,
The original?
Yeah, but that idea of just, like, Santa, like, he's not just the American Santa. He's played here by an American, or is Edmund Gwen?
He might be British. Attenborough's British, so I could see him being British.
Yeah. I don't know. Doesn't say right here. Yeah, he is British.
Yeah, his name is Edmund. I feel like I haven't run across a lot of those in the U.S.
True. That's true. There's William H. Macy in the Stuart Gordon movie.
That's true, Written by David Mamet.
Yeah, yeah.
I never saw it. I heard it was terrible.
It's weird. This movie also came up in when Scott and I were doing movies based on plays, even though I don't think it is based on a... I can't remember if it is or not.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But we were talking about... Sorry, we'll get back to Santa and to Edmund. We were talking about how... it's surprising how many playwrights turned directors have done relatively few of their own plays as directors.
Yeah.
I think other than Oleana, that might be the only David Mamet play that he directed also as a movie.
Was Things Change...
Oh,
I think that was a play, but now I don't remember.
So we were talking about Neil LaBute, who did a couple of his own, but is mostly had we were talking about David Mamet in general and Edmund, which is a Stuart Gordon movie. My memory of it is that it's very grotesque.
Misanthropic,
misogynistic. It definitely probably hasn't aged well in terms of cultural values, but it's interesting and it's got a great cast.
Yeah.
It's William H. Macy and Julia Stiles and Bokeem Woodbine and a bunch of others. And it's probably like 80 minutes long.
I'll throw it on on Christmas and see how it works out.
There you go. Anyway, so... I guess that's all I was going to say. It's just that, like, my idea of Santa Claus as being, like, just the perfect, jolly old Saint Nick who spreads cheer and good good cheer, whatever. Yeah. What goodwill is?
Goodwill.
It spreads goodwill not just to America, all over the world.
Yeah,
is really formed by Miracle on 34th Street, and Edmund Gwenn.
And you know, it's so I guess we kind of have to talk about our childhood. I was not raised believing in Santa Claus. Like we still went through
the motions.
That sounds like we were all bored. But no, like, we still, like, observed the tradition. Like, you know, we had, there are photos of me, like, sitting on Santa's lap and stuff. But I don't remember ever actually believing in Santa Claus. And what's odd is, like, when I think about the Christmas movies that I watched growing up, Santa wasn't a big part of them. I didn't really watch any of the Rankin Bass ones.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I watched How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Charlie Brown Christmas, A Christmas Story. I'm sure there are some other ones, but yeah, that's kind of all I watched. And so I saw the 90s Miracle on 34th Street first, and then I watched the older one. I prefer the 90s one, but that's probably just because I saw it first.
Right.
But yeah, so, like, when I, honestly, like, if you were to ask me as a kid, like, what is Santa like? I think I'd probably first go to A Christmas Story, and of course I know he's not the actual Santa in that. But, like, the idea of Santa being antagonistic and intimidating, that does show up, by the way, in a couple of, like, the movies where it's, like, the actual Santa Claus, like, being intimidating and being, you know, larger than life and that kind of thing. But yeah, so it probably wasn't until, like, The Santa Claus with Tim Allen that I started, like, watching Santa stuff and being aware of him, like, as a movie character.
But even that, even Santa Claus falls, I think, a little under my, like, definition of, like, Santa, but with a twist, because, like,
oh, for sure,
Santa dies at the beginning, and then somebody else becomes Santa. You're reminding me, by the way, not only did we believe in Santa as kids, we also celebrated St. Nick's Day, or St. Nicholas Day, which not all of Americans do, but basically there was, it's December 5th or 6th, not bothering to look it up. And it's like a pre-Christmas little warm-up, you know. It's like the WonderCon to Christmas's Comic-Con. you get like a present or two or whatever. And I know there's a whole thing with, like, we didn't, like, put our shoes outside of our rooms, but I know that's one way that, like, you put your shoes outside of your room and there's presents in your shoe in the morning. I can't remember. That's not how we did it. We just had stockings on St. Nicholas Day. But, I'd love to hear from listeners if they celebrated or if they continue to celebrate St. Nicholas Day, because since I was a kid, I never hear of it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some.
Yeah, maybe it's just a Midwest thing, or it's not a California thing. Maybe that's why I never hear about it anymore. Or I just don't have kids. That could be part of it, too.
Yeah, admittedly.
Christmas, but, like, I don't even know if my siblings' kids celebrate St. Nicholas Day.
Are your siblings, like, this might sound insulting to ask it like this, are they, like, super Catholic?
No, I guess not.
It feels like the kind of thing that, like, a very devoutly Catholic household. Yeah. I should ask Jen. She, you know, her family was Catholic.
Yeah, and Midwestern, so maybe, yeah. But sticking with, like, the very traditional depictions, you've got Santa Claus the movie, which I know you just watched for the first time. I watched multiple times as a kid, but not since then. So I want to get back to that. But there's also, in more recent terms, there's the Polar Express.
Yes.
Which, in which Tom Hanks plays Santa as well, because he's also the conductor. I've only seen the movie once.
And the homeless guy on the top.
Okay. Oh, that's right. I've only seen the movie once.
I saw it in its entirety only once. I've seen the first hour of the Polar Express several times because the boys are really into it. And so they'll come over and we'll start watching it. But then they can't really stay the whole time, so I'm pretty well acquainted with the first hour. And it's been fun. Like, this is really like the first movie that like they will play, you know,
like
they will reenact and all that. And so I'm going to waste everybody's time and talk about some of that.
No, that's
because it's adorable.
Yeah.
So my facility is right next to my church, which has a playground, which has like a little like kid size trolley that's stationary. And so the boys will go on there and they will play Polar Express. So I'll just say all the stuff they say. First, they yell out, "Ah, bah." That's all aboard. And they say, and then I say, "Where are we going?" They go, "The No Pole." That's the North Pole.
Yeah, I got that.
And then they go, "The Polar Oppress," which I thought was hilarious. That's a very different very different Santa and Elf movie.
Yeah, no, that might be on my list of metal albums to listen to.
There you go. There you go. But yeah, and then in the scene, I think the train is blocked by a herd of caribou. And so they go, "Oh, no, caribou." And then they look, and then there was one time Dashiell looked at me and he said, "You're a caribou." And I was like, "I'm not a caribou. I'm your dad." And he goes, "No, you're a caribou." And it was very cute. But then, so there's a scene where the train is careening out of control on ice.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so the boys, and in that, somebody like instructs our main character to like steer the train left and then right and then left. And so they love that. So they'll ask me or Jen to like instruct them how to get off the ice. But that's not how they say it. What they say is, "Can you help me do everything, Daddy?" That's what they say. That's how they define it, is doing everything. And so it's really wonderful. And, you know, I watch it. To me, the film is still creepy as hell.
Yeah.
But yeah, but they like it, and that's fine with me. Sorry about that.
So, but no, now I want to hear your thoughts on Santa Claus, the movie. Because, again, I used to watch it a lot as a kid. It's Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
But it's David Huddleston who's American.
Yeah.
But Dudley Moore is British. And I also remember, is it a British movie? Because
it did huge in Britain.
But I remember, it's also the first time I ever heard anyone say Happy Christmas instead of Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
In that movie. So there must be, part of it must take place in the UK.
I don't know if it takes place in the UK. They go to New York, and then there's the North Pole. But the initial scene where Santa and his wife freeze to death, by the way, that's the opening scene. I think that's in like some like Slavic country or like a Nordic country.
And is that where they say Happy Christmas? I don't know.
I mean, the elves all
who it is.
The elves all speak with British accents. And so they say Happy Christmas.
That's what it is. It's the elves. Okay. Happy Christmas.
And so, I was aware of it when I was a kid. And when I worked at Video Update, we had our preview tapes, and we had one for like each year. And so I would throw in, like, we had a tape for 1985, even though this was 1999.
Yeah.
It's like, this will be fun. So I'd throw that in. And so there would be trailers for Santa Claus, the movie. And I was just like, oh, I never watched that. But when we decided to do this topic, I thought, well, obviously, I have to watch that. It's Santa Claus, the movie.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, in my mind, it sounds like, well, this is the definitive Santa Claus movie. Because it's called Santa Claus, the movie. When you watch it, you realize, like, holy shit, this movie wants to be Superman so bad.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Right, even, like, that's called Superman, the movie. This is Santa Claus, the movie. John Lithgow might as well be Lex Luthor.
Wow.
And then, like, the way that...
I picked up on none of this as a kid.
Oh, of course not. And then, you know, you look into it, and I think the director did Supergirl, and I think the producers did Superman 3, And I think the director might have also done Jaws 2, actually, but anyway.
Well, he also did 14 episodes of Smallville. I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
No, that's... Okay, so I guess...
He's clearly got some Superman.
But it's just like, when you watch it, like, if you've seen the Richard Donner Superman, and then you watch this, like, you know, once we're out of the North Pole, which, again, might as well be a Fortress of Solitude, once we're out of there, it just feels like it exists in the same cinematic universe as Superman. It feels like it. It looks like it. The music, which is by Henry Mancini, I think, sounds like it's trying to evoke John Williams. And so it's just really interesting. Like, it really does seem to want to be like a superhero origin story. I wound up not liking it very much. I enjoyed the performances. I do think it is mostly a waste of Dudley Moore, like knowing what he's capable of and just seeing him so like hemmed in was a bummer. John Lithgow, however, not hemmed in at all. He is as like over the top as is required. The movie's not terrible, but yeah, it also just, I don't know, I just couldn't really get into it. It might have to do with the fact that I first watched it when I was 41 yesterday. So, you know, it might not be for me.
Yeah. So, yeah, the director, I don't know how you say his name.
Yeah.
Gino Sparks, maybe?
Yeah.
Gino Sparks. Yeah, he did Jaws 2 and Supergirl. He also did Somewhere in Time, which is the Christopher Reeve, Jane Seymour time travel love movie, yeah. Like romance movie that I've never seen. Yeah, and then just like a ton of TV.
Yeah.
He's still alive at the moment, but he...
it's got to be up there.
Yeah, but he was directing Grey's Anatomy episodes as recently as 2019. That's his most recent credit. Oh, and Designated Survivor.
I could see him being actually a really good TV director.
Right.
Like, when you watch Jaws 2, it just doesn't feel cinematic. I mean, especially when the first one's directed by Spielberg, who thinks that way. But the first one really does feel like it's a TV sequel or something. But yeah, I mean, the movie's fine. And yeah, like, as I was looking up facts about it, it did really well in the UK. It is considered, like, it is definitely in the discussion of, like, best Christmas movies ever in the UK. John Lithgow said that, like, when he's in the UK and people stop him, half the time it's for Santa Claus the movie.
And the other half it's Winston Churchill from The Crown?
I have to assume so. Or probably Raising Cain. That is not a great movie.
I never saw it, but like I have, do you have memories like this of like movies you saw trailers for as a kid when you were too young to see them and were like, oh man.
Oh,
I wish
course.
I could see that movie.
Of course.
For some reason, Raising Cain, I was like, that trailer. Well, yeah. We weren't using the word trailer at the time. I was like, that preview makes me want to see that movie, but I knew I was never going to.
Yeah.
Because it was rated R. Not
That's
never.
How I felt
but
about
But then I never did.
Oh, you're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. I only did it because I think I reviewed the Scream Factory Blu-ray for the site. And then, I was that way with The Lawnmower Man.
Reviewed that Blu-ray, didn't you?
Which I did.
I know, I still haven't seen that one.
Mostly terrible. But I did see, not seeing it did not stop me from seeing Lawnmower Man 2, Job's War, with my brother. And I was like, this is really bad. But I thought like, well, maybe I just don't get it. Yeah, I think it was just really bad.
All right. As far as other, like, sort of classical depictions of Santa, I don't have that many unless you count The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but it's weird that he's in there.
I mean, it's one of the ones I thought, and I had never read those books. I think I had seen it on stage, like a play.
Oh, okay.
But I remember when I saw the 2005 one, and then when he showed up, I'm like, the fuck? This is out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Why is this here? And then he leaves. And he's just gone.
Yeah.
And I actually rewatched that scene this morning.
Okay.
Just so I could, like... It's like, well, maybe if I watch it now, it'll make more sense. It really doesn't. It's like a cameo.
Yeah. And, yeah, I did. I had, like, a box set of all the Narnia books. Yeah. I think I know I read Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I might have read the second one, which Prince Caspian, maybe. I can't remember whatever the second one was. I definitely did not read all seven as a kid, but I definitely read Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And, reportedly, you know, C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien were good friends, but Tolkien hated that Santa Claus was in Narnia and tried to get C.S. Lewis to take him out.
I think he's correct. sorry, can we take a break?
Oh, yeah.
I need tricks.
Okay, so did you have any other, like, classical fantasies?
That feels like a band name, too. A metal band, especially death metal. Well, let's see. Looking at my list here, not really. In a way, so a lot of staff members last couple of days when I told them what I was going to be doing, they said, "Oh, you got to watch the Christmas Chronicles with Kurt Russell as Santa." So I started watching that this morning. I wasn't able to get through all of it.
Because it was so bad, or you just didn't have time?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking, like, I could have phrased that differently. Yeah. No, I actually was enjoying it. And in a way, like, Kurt Russell's Santa is, as I'm sure you can imagine, has a definite modern sensibility to him. But also just kind of the things he says. And, like, whether it be, like, Santa Claus the movie or Miracle on 34th Street, there's always, like, a naivete to Santa.
Okay.
When he's in there interacting with the real world. And it definitely has that. But I think he does a good job. And then they also do things where, like, when a kid first sees him, they're like, "You look smaller." And he's like, or no, she said, "You look different." And he's like, "Why? Because I'm not a big fat slob." And I thought that was kind of funny. But yeah, so in a way, it's kind of a bridge.
To be fair to Santa Claus, it's a fictional person.
Yeah.
He's never depicted as a slob.
Yeah, no,
he's kind of a fashion icon.
I kind of love the idea that, like, up at the North Pole, he's, like, got a tank top on with, like, stains on it. And, like, you know.
Always has eggnog in his beard.
Yeah, a lot of, like, empty pizza boxes. But, it was just like, you know, playing Halo. But anyway, so in a way, it's kind of a, like, that's sort of a bridge for me. I feel like if a kid watched that, I feel like they could probably sort of transition into something like Miracle on 34th Street, which I feel like a lot of modern audiences and modern kids would just think it's just, like, too sappy.
Right.
But for my money, again, like, the first one is very good. There's nothing wrong with it. But I love that one from the 90s. I had not seen it for a long time. Jen grew up with it. And as I watch it, it's like, not only is it a great depiction of Santa Claus by Richard Attenborough.
Yeah.
But also the way it's shot, the way it uses colors, like, it takes place in the modern day. But everything about it feels like a throwback. And it's got a great cast, too. It's got, I think, Elizabeth Perkins, J.T. Walsh, Robert Prosky, Joss Ackland, I believe. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Recently passed away.
Yeah. Speaking of C.S. Lewis, he actually played C.S. Lewis in the play Shadowlands initially.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess enough people liked The Christmas Chronicles, they made a sequel.
Yeah.
There are two of them. I haven't seen it. Okay, so transitioning into, I feel a lot of a soft way to get into, like, the Santa with a Twist is movies like Elf.
Yeah.
Where, like, Ed Asner as Santa is still very much the classical Santa. It's just the movie around him is a little bit, I mean, now Elf is a Christmas classic, as, you can hear me and Josh Long and I talk about on the Patreon, upcoming Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/battleshipretention. It's a way to get extra content and also to help support Tyler because he gets some of the money.
And also, I feel like, you know how we said that like West is our resident musicologist? I feel like Josh is just like our resident eater.
He is becoming our resident. Yeah. Because now they got sick of eating gross food with me.
Yeah.
You can't do it. So yeah. Scott refused. So Josh has become our go-to.
Josh will never refuse.
Yeah. We've already done. There's one up as we're recording this. There's another one coming that's about Elf. And we've got one planned for January. It might not happen, but we'll see. Yeah, so sign up at patreon.com. But anyway,
Real quick story, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, please.
I remember when Jen and I went to Switzerland 10 years ago now. So I wound up buying like a lot of like Swiss candy for friends and stuff. And Megan, Josh's wife, picked us up from the airport. And as she dropped us off, I said, oh, by the way, here, give this to Josh. And it was like a bag of candy. And she's like, oh, he's going to love this. She's like, I don't think we have any candy at the house. So he's going to be really excited. It's like, this is a grown man we're talking about. And I like that, like, everyone in the household, they're all very aware of how much candy they've got. And it's like, oh, we're running low. But anyway, okay. Yeah.
We're not a candy house. Natalie and I are in what I guess has come to be known as an ingredients household.
Sure.
In the sense that we don't have a lot of, like, I mean, I generally keep like some a few microwave burritos or like toaster waffles in the freezer. Yeah. Other than that, we don't have a lot of like
things that are made.
Like, heat and serve type of foods. We're an ingredients household. And definitely a big part of that is we have very few snack products and pretty much no sweets. I mean, this time of year we have sweets, especially thank you to Kate Kolzik. We have some cookies, which I'm sorry, I was realizing now as I say that, I was supposed to bring you some cookies today.
All right.
You'll get some next week.
Awesome.
So thank you to Kate. So anyway, something like Elf, which now is a Christmas classic, but I think given Will Ferrell's sort of reputation, I mean, this would have been the same year as Anchorman. Is that right? Is that
also 2003?
Oh, that's 2004.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, like, given Will Ferrell's reputation at the time, I think definitely Elf was seen as like, oh, it's going to be like a send-up or a comedy version of a Christmas movie. And it definitely is very funny.
Yeah.
But it also is, I remember even marveling at the time, especially when, like, you know, they have to like save Santa's sleigh from falling out of the sky over Central Park. Yeah. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a like fully like open-hearted Christmas movie. And I wasn't expecting that, but I was a very pleasant surprise. Elf is also close to me. I've said this. I said this on the Patreon as well, but for the non-Patreon people, for the low lives who haven't, the deadbeats who haven't subscribed to the Patreon yet.
Oh, great.
I'm joking.
Let's push away everyone.
Yeah. No, I'm joking, of course. The circumstances under which I saw Elf, obviously, or make it an emotionally heightened experience. My dad had died 2 months before Elf came out. And that year, my mom decided that, like, going to all of the annual, like, family Christmas stuff would be too difficult. Yeah. So we went to Nashville for like a week, just like stayed in a hotel and like had Christmas by ourselves. And one of the nights we went to the movies and we saw Elf together as a family.
Oh,
so it's always going to be very close to me because of that experience of seeing
a movie where fatherhood is a big thing as
that's
well.
That's true. But, my dad was a better dad than James Caan is at the beginning of that movie.
Yes, that's true.
All right.
Elf,
and then go ahead.
I have a hard time viewing that as like a classical Santa, but I think that's mostly because of the casting choice, which is Ed Asner, and he's making no effort to not be Ed Asner, which is fine. It's funny, but it's hard not to see. It's like Santa seems grumpy. It's like, well, he's not saying any grumpy things. Oh, it's Lou Grant, you know.
Right, yeah.
So yeah.
And then another movie that is 4 years more recent.
Okay.
It's called Fred Claus.
Ah, yes.
It is not, in my opinion, a very good movie.
Yeah.
But, and it's also one that I would have felt at the time is like, this is destined to be forgotten.
Yeah.
This is a movie that time forgot. And yet, weirdly, every December, I feel like I still see tweets and blue sky posts about Fred Claus. So I guess we have to address Fred Claus. But that's another one where it's like, it's a comedy, but Paul Giamatti is not like, he's still a good Santa.
Yeah.
Like, he's a good guy. You know, it's not like he's Krampus or anything like that. You know, he's a good, but it's the other elements around it that make it that Vince Vaughn plays Santa's brother.
Yeah.
And Santa needs help. I can't, I saw it in the theater. I haven't seen it since.
Part of it a year ago when I was in the hospital, and I only had a regular TV that I had no control over. So a lot of the time I'd just be like, all right, put it on AMC and we'll just see what happens.
Yeah.
And so Fred Claus was on there.
American movie classic, of course.
Of course. And then, you know, because it was the Christmas season, you know, the month before, for some reason, they played a lot of Weekend at Bernie's, you know, American movie classic, Weekend at Bernie's. And so, I saw, like, the first part of it. And frankly, I remember thinking, like, well, I'll say this. I remember thinking, like, this is not a bad premise.
Right.
Of course, a premise is not the execution. But I did think I liked what Paul Giamatti was doing. And again, it's like, the character is not naive, but he is a little bit oblivious. Like, a little bit oblivious to, like, the way his brother feels and, like, what it must be to be, like, the brother of this guy, you know? And, you know, I didn't finish it. I'm sure it goes off the rails. But for what I saw, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it has, so it's David Dobkin, the director, coming right off of Wedding Crashers.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is a sort of pre him being a name, Dan Fogelman wrote the script before going on to do like This Is Us and stuff like that. So it's got some, like, I don't know if pedigree is the right word, but
Potential?
Or I guess it's like it has a sort of professionalism, I guess, to it. I remember not thinking much of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But maybe I should revisit it now that it's become a classic, or it's on its way to becoming a classic. But
I don't think it was long enough ago that you're like forgetting the good stuff. I mean, you probably have a pretty good memory of it.
By the way,
just
IMDb-ing Fred Claus, there is a Brazilian art director and production designer named Fred Claus, and he looks like a biker Santa Claus.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
Anyway.
And he also, speaking of Christmas, looks like our friend Alonzo Duralde.
Oh yeah, he does look like Alonzo Duralde. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else other than that would work as that, like, blurring the line between, like, traditional Santa and, like, twist on Santa.
Well, I think there are a few.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I guess when you look at something like Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That's probably more traditional.
Yeah.
Although I mean, we don't really see much of him as a character. I do like that he, like, it's one of my favorite lines in the film. It's like, after everything's done, like, Santa Claus comes up and it's like, bump, and he says, like, bumpy sleigh ride, Jack, and just, like, just has no patience for this guy's nonsense. So I feel like that's
pretty... I should watch that. I think, like you with Polar Express, it's been a long time since I've seen Nightmare Before Christmas all the way through.
Oh, okay.
I've definitely, like, caught bits and pieces or started it and not finished it, which is weird because it's like a 75-minute movie.
Yeah.
But, I should probably rewatch Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah. It's a fun, like, from a Christmas standpoint, it's a fun depiction of the North Pole and all that sort of thing.
But I remember, I guess now... Nightmare Before Christmas seems like a signifier of the most, like, safe within the boundaries version of rebellion. Like,
yeah.
It's still Disney adult, like, Hot Topic type bullshit.
Sure.
But at the time, when I was a kid, seeing a movie where characters were singing, like, a jolly song about, like, like killing Santa or whatever they're planning on doing, it felt so iconoclastic or rebellious to me at the time. But when I was a kid, that's...
Then when you see the, you know, the walking, talking tree with skeletons hanging off it, and each skeleton has an inverted cross on its forehead, you're like, shit, man.
Yeah.
Pretty intense.
Yeah, it's crazy that that movie is... That it got made by whom it got made by.
Yeah.
And that
they're really, like, they're really embracing it now. Like, I mean, you go to Disneyland this time. Well, you go, and that's the beauty of it. It's like, oh, this has Halloween and Christmas.
Yeah.
We can make money from this at Disneyland for, like, 2.5 months.
I feel like it's more. I mean, I feel like Haunted Mansion is Nightmare Before Christmas, like, a third of the year. It feels like.
Yeah, it feels like that.
Like, it's because it starts in September, right? Like,
I think it starts at the end of September.
Okay, so it's, yeah. I haven't been to Disneyland in forever.
Yeah.
Because, I've said this before, I like Disneyland. I've always had fun there. The prices, it's fun.
Yeah.
The prices have gone up that so much that at a certain point, I just went, like, well, it's not that fun.
Like, yeah.
It's just not worth it to me. It's too expensive.
I mean, Jen and I used to go all the time when we had annual passes. And at the time, like, it's like, oh, if you go 3 times in a year, it pays for itself, maybe even less. And now I feel like, if you go, like, 5 times, maybe, and, you know, but we also had jobs that would allow us to go in the middle of the
week. I was going to say, at the time, you both had non-traditional work schedules, and so you were able to get the cheaper annual pass because you were able to go, like, weekdays and off months and stuff like that.
And now Jen's cousin has a job at Disneyland, like, on the engineering side, so he can get us in for free. By us, I think it's safe to say not me for at least a while.
Yeah.
But Jen and the boys have gone a couple of times, and the boys love it. Like, you know, there's, I see all these photos of them, like, running over and hugging Eeyore and stuff like that. It's pretty cute.
Yeah, that is.
But yeah, oh boy, yeah. They, Disneyland just milks this movie that's supposed to be, I mean, I feel like it's a great metaphor for Tim Burton himself. I know he didn't direct it, but yeah, it feels like, oh, this is very, it's very dangerous. And then after a while, it's like, oh, this has been totally co-opted. Now it's on a lot of shirts.
Yeah. But Henry Selick is still... did you see Wendell and Wild last year?
No, I didn't.
Really, really good. I really like Henry Selick.
Oh, yeah, I stand by him.
Yeah.
I rewatched Coraline in October, and man, I know the movie's a few years old now, but man, that's great.
It's like a decade old.
Yeah.
it's a few years.
You know, I look at it this way. I've seen movies from the 1890s, so 10 years old is a few years.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like... Yeah, because I remember as a budding cinephile, as a teenager, I would get annoyed by friends who, like, anything that was no longer on the new release wall at Blockbuster was, like, an old movie.
Yeah.
And I would get annoyed. But now I feel like maybe I'm, because I'm trying not to come across as the old guy, I'm more, like, quick to point out, like, that movie's not so new anymore.
Yeah, I will say, if it's... If it's older than, like, 1990, I'll say, like, that's older. Yeah. I'll say, oh, it's an older movie.
But I guess what I've become more cognizant of as I've gotten older is that there are movies that came out when I was an adult that other people who are also now adults can say they, quote-unquote, grew up on, you know? So, like... People like, you know, people who are adults now can say, like, oh, I grew up watching the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, which all came out after we graduated college.
Yeah.
So, like, those are old movies. So those, like, I think that's why I try to become more aware of, like, Coraline is relatively new in the history of things, but there are people who are adults who saw it as kids.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I...
Yeah, it's all very depressing.
it's
I mean,
not,
but
just,
also,
just
like...
the way things go.
It's, I mean... something an article I saw is like next year, Steamboat Willie becomes public domain. Like, that's kind of crazy, right?
I mean,
I know it's an older movie, but
it's overdue. Like, I know, I mean, Disney, yeah. Not to get on my high horse, but like, those kind of like laws have changed because of Disney lobbying hold on to, like, Steamboat Willie should have been public domain already by now.
Yeah.
But it's about damn time.
It's just like such a weird thing that, like, I'm sure Disney, you know, they thought like, all right, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And it's like, yeah, but now, like, you can just have Steamboat Willie. It's going to show up on you, and there's like nothing they can do about it. But, weird.
You've noticed, I'm sure, because like the Winnie the Pooh universe is all public domain now. So immediately there was like Blood Honey, whatever it was called. And then also on the other two in the third season, Chase Dreams, and they try to make him look like a bad boy.
Yeah.
He gets tattoos of Piglet and Eeyore, but with tits.
I don't think I remember that.
Oh, it comes back in the last episode that he like they were all like not real tattoos, but then like at the very end of the last episode, he reveals that he liked the Eeyore with tits, so he got it, or the Piglet with tits, so he got it for real on his side.
I just remember his shitty little mustache.
Yeah,
yeah, like just like a bit of facial hair, right?
Yeah, yeah. Ken Marino's like pointing out all the tattoos. Like, I came up with this one. It says piss. And Molly Shannon's like, yes, I can see where it says piss across my son's chest.
Man, that's a good show. It's such a shame that it's not coming back.
I mean, but like, it's more of a shame that those guys couldn't help but be, apparently couldn't help but be pricks with the writing staff.
That's true.
But that's, I think we talked about it, and now I'm drawing a blank on the author's name, but there's a book that came out this year called Burn It Down that's about, like, basically writers' rooms throughout the history of, like, television have been breeding grounds for physical and verbal abuse.
I believe that.
And that the these aren't, like, examples like this, what you read about, like, Lost, like Carlton Cuse and Dan McLaughlin and Lost, like, these aren't necessarily exceptions. This is kind of like the culture that the industry has bred around these writers' rooms, and it needs to be burned down, as the books.
I'll tell you one thing. They're on the naughty list. Moving on to Santa Claus.
Okay.
So, let's see. So, I'm trying to see what I've talked about.
Yeah, I've only got a few left, but they're like the ones I have left are like, yeah, I guess I only have like three that I haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I only have a couple.
Yeah, so I've got Rise of the Guardians.
Oh my gosh.
Which
I forgot.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin voices like a, it's sort of like a Justice League or Avengers of, it's like, so he's like the leader.
Yeah.
With like Jack Frost is like the new recruit.
Yeah.
But there's also like the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, I don't remember what the other
one is. The Tooth Fairy, maybe?
Is it the Tooth Fairy?
I can't remember. I saw the movie twice, weirdly, because I went to like a screening of it and then my nephew, who was still like at that point was still at the age for it. I had, or on this time of year, I had like an award screener and he was staying with us and he wanted to see it. So I saw the movie twice in the space of like 2 weeks
when it came out.
But
I remember enjoying it, but I think,
I thought it was fine.
I think the thing that I remember most about it was going to Comic-Con a couple of years later. And there was a couple where the guy was dressed like Jack Frost and the girl was dressed like Elsa from Frozen. And I was like, I like that.
That's great.
That's fun.
I remember Jude Law voicing the bad guy and liking his voice performance. I don't remember that much about it.
But I mean, clearly it faded from my memory.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think of it here. Yeah.
And then there's, did you ever see Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale?
No, I didn't.
That's the there's a lot of, like you were talking about, there's a lot of like evil killer or whatever dressed as Santa.
Yeah.
But Rare Exports is actually like a Santa is evil.
Are he's evil? Okay.
Well, it's that like he is evil in the sense that he like metes out punishment to the naughty kids.
Yeah.
And the elves are like monsters that do his bidding.
Okay.
But he's been like,
so there's a Krampus element there.
I guess so, yeah. I never saw Krampus, but yeah, I think that's
it's
the idea.
Great.
That's what
it
I hear.
Great.
But yeah, Rare Exports is like a Santa Claus gets like frozen in an avalanche and then like centuries later, he's uncovered and wreaks havoc. And a bunch of, like, it's sort of like an Armageddon situation where they hire, like, the drillers to do the thing. They hire, like, some, like, big game hunters, essentially, to, like...
to kill Santa Claus?
But to capture Santa Claus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and cage him. Yeah.
Well, along those lines, I will say that I watched Violent Night, which came out last year. Features David Harbour as Santa Claus. He is not evil, but he has no qualms about killing people that could be seen as a threat. That movie is so much better than it has any right to be.
Okay.
The acting is good. David Harbour's great. John Leguizamo is the villain, and he actually does some really good work with it. But yeah, I really like this depiction of Santa because, you know, he, in a way, like, he's kind of your standard, like, burned out cop who, like, gets passion for the job again. And, yeah, it's a great performance. And the action is fun. It's kind of funny and all that. But yeah, I mean, the reason to see it is him as the actual Santa Claus. And it's that kind of thing where, you know, everyone's like, oh, we don't believe in Santa Claus. And rather than be like, oh, they don't believe in me, it's like, I don't believe in them either. They suck. People suck, you know, and so that's kind of fun.
Oh, well, you're reminding me. Never mind. I've made a vow that I'm not going to be a guy who overly quotes, I think you should leave on this podcast, but I was thinking about a different Santa Claus. Everything has sucked lately.
Yeah, that's right.
So I have to see everyone naked to make sure they have tattoos or not. I don't care about it, but it's not nice. That's right. All right.
That was pretty funny, though.
The only other movie I have on my list, we couldn't end the episode without mentioning Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Yeah.
I don't really have much to say about it, except
that it's just just awful.
It's really, really, really bad. But
also, I feel like he doesn't actually conquer them. I think he like makes friends with them.
I mean, yeah, these kind of movies always just like had a title that would get people in the doors. Digression again. Have you read about or seen like how like the Mean Girls musical and like the Color Purple musical, the like trailers and TV spots have no singing in them?
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And yeah, they're just like trying to trick people into seeing musicals.
Well, I've seen the Color Purple one a lot. It shows up before a lot of YouTube videos. And there's no singing, but there is dancing.
Okay.
So it's like, all right.
All right, they get it.
They put it out there a little bit.
Anyway, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians is the last one on my list.
Last one on mine. In a way, I guess this is classic Santa Claus, but it's also kind of the Santa from Violent Night as well. And it's the movie Klaus on Netflix, an animated movie that I believe is, I think it's 2D. My guess, there's probably a lot of computers involved anyway. And it's beautifully designed, and it has really good character work and really good vocal work. Santa Claus is voiced by J.K. Simmons, and it's funny, and it's very touching, and it absolutely, like, I recommend it to people as much as I can, because it absolutely deserves to be, like, watched regularly. Like, it is that kind of classic movie, and it's an origin story. And I think one that, like, works really well. And it's one of those things where, you know, unlike Santa Claus the movie, where it's like, oh, we froze to death and woke up in the North Pole, and now they're saying that we are cursed to this life of servitude, but we're fine with it. Like, rather than something as abrupt as that, this is a Santa Claus who, like, you see every step of the way as far as, like, how he comes to be okay with this and comes to really embrace it, and it all feels very natural, and it really is. I mean, I cannot stress enough just how really great the movie is. It's a great movie in general, but it also absolutely, like, deserves to be considered a new Christmas classic, and I think probably in the next few years, because I think it's only a few years old now.
2019.
So that's 4 years. Yeah.
But it's really 3 years because 2020 doesn't count.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I feel like probably in the next few years, I feel like it will be part of the conversation. And I could see, like, at some point, maybe they'll make, like, toys or plush dolls or something like that. At least that's what I hope. Because, yeah, you know, there's a lot of mediocre movies that become, you know, considered classics. And this one actually, like, should be. So, which is always exciting.
Well, I'm glad we ended on a recommendation not Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Yeah. You can find us at BattleshipRetention.com. I was trying to think if we reviewed any of these. Did you review Krampus?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know if there's any Christmas movies or Santa Claus-specific movies that you could find reviews of at BattleshipRetention.com. But still, you can find other movie reviews and all sorts of other stuff, including my other podcast, The One Where I Met Your Mother, at BattleshipPretension.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Pretension. I'm also on Blue Sky at Davey Pretension. You can follow Tyler on Twitter at More Lessons, right?
Yes.
You can also follow me on Letterboxd at David Bax. And again, the Patreon, patreon.com/BattleshipPretension.
And I will say that I'm still writing articles for the Rediscover Television blog. I wrote one about A Christmas Story. I wrote one about A Charlie Brown Christmas that I'm actually quite proud of. And then at the beginning of the month, I wrote an article about, like, what makes a good Christmas movie. And so, yeah, if you want to go over to the Rediscover Television blog, you can read those along with several of our other articles that I've written over the last few months.
All right. Other than that, thank you for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.